from KQED.
And with that, the three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals concludes their hearing today on the case of Proposition 8. We're rejoined now by University of California Hastings College of Law Professor David Levine to get his take on what has taken place over the last 2 hours and 45 minutes, went a little longer, David Levine, than was expected. Give us your overall sense of this argument over the past hour that we've been hearing on the merits of the case.
Sure. Well, you've got three very, very engaged judges on these issues, and I think that they were trying very hard to focus on the legal issues and to stay away from some of the rhetoric. If you're looking to think, well, by looking at the questions, do we have a sense of where they might go? If we get to the merits, if we just talk about the second part of the argument for the moment, it seems to me you might be able to get a decision that's 3-0 or certainly 2-1 with Judge Reinhart and Judge Hawkins, which would say that in the peculiar situation we find ourselves here in California, which is that we have domestic partnership rights that are, I guess, as strong as they are anywhere in the country, that you have the series of state California Supreme Court cases where, in effect, we had that moment, those few months, where same-sex marriage was allowed, and then it was taken away. And so that now we have same-sex marriages for 18,000 people, we have millions of heterosexual marriages, and then we have a group of people who can never get married. And that given that all we're talking about in many ways in California is a label, that that is irrational. And that that can't even sustain this lowest basis of scrutiny, which is rational basis scrutiny. So that you might be able to write an opinion that says this is a very special situation, in contrast to an opinion that says there has to be same-sex marriage and there has – and in effect, there has to be same-sex marriage allowed across the country. So
it seemed like the judges were – trying to find their way through that particular question. We heard those words, rational basis review, come up a lot. Tell us what that means in terms of this particular case. They're looking for whether or not there's a rational reason to do what?
Well, the rational reason would be what is the basis that would be considered legitimate for the people of California to have voted for Prop 8? We have the situation – because at that moment, we had the situation where the California Supreme Court had said that under the California Constitution, you can't have a separation between domestic partnerships and heterosexual marriages, and that that simply was illegal. And so that then the people of California come in, and 7 million people, not including me, said that it was proper to separate out the word marriage. It did nothing to affect domestic partnerships. It didn't change the California Supreme Court's holding that same-sex orientation was entitled to special protection under the California Constitution. So we have this very peculiar situation.
And you heard a number of the judges. Judge Smith, who was appointed by President George W. Bush and is regarded as the most conservative member of this panel, he brought up a number of times, well, what rational basis do we really have to challenge this, because after all, as you're suggesting, David Levine, in California, you already have all these other rights. So really, is there any rational reason to say that Proposition 8 is legit?
Sure. It's the question of fit, if you will. What Judge Smith also said, and this is why it's a little hard to tell which way he might go, is that he said, can't we just say that it is helpful to support procreation and proper raising of children to separate out the label of marriage? And is that or is that not a rational thing to do? The rational basis standard is pretty much a pretty low, easy standard to meet. And of course, Mr. Olson and Ms. Stewart were trying very, very hard to get away from that proposition and to say, no, no, in this circumstance, you can't make this invidious discrimination.
When Mr. Cooper, Charles Cooper, who is representing the proponents of Proposition 8, was holding forth, he was making the argument that the society does have an interest in this, and the interest of marriage to society is such that we can take an active role in how we define marriage because it affects children and so forth and so on. Did that argument seem to be taking with the three judges?
Well, it's a little hard to say. I mean, I do think at the end of the day, it's quite possible that Judge Smith will write an opinion for himself, if not for the others, which supports that argument, that it is within the realm of reason, if you will, for the people of California to think that that's a useful thing to do, that it will be helpful with respect to raising the most wonderful children we can have, to help with with that familial situation, and that whether or not other people might disagree with that, it is a rational choice to be made.
Judge Reinhardt, generally regarded to be the most liberal member of this three-judge panel, questioned a number of times to Mr. Olson whether or not they had defined that there was a constitutional right to marry. He seemed to be trying to figure out, well, how far do we have to go here? Do we actually have to say that there's a constitutional right to marry whoever you wish?
Right. It depends on what your premise of the case is. And that's what Judge Reinhardt was trying to struggle with, is that if at the end of the day the premise of the case is that there absolutely must be a right to marry whomever you want to marry, then indeed this court has to get to that issue and they have to decide under the U.S. Supreme Court whether or not that's the only arrangement states can make. Or instead, is it possible to reach a more narrow result, which again would go back to the peculiarities of California's situation, where we have had this rather convoluted legal history?
It seemed that Mr. Olson was putting forth the most vigorous argument in that regard, which was that there is no reason to make this discriminatory. He said it's clear that it's discriminatory. It's clear that there's harm. The only rational way you could rule in favor of Proposition 8 would be to say that that's justified. And he was making that argument to go all the way, right, that this is in fact a right that's available to anyone no matter what.
I think at the end of the day, Mr. Olson would like to be exactly there. I think that he, of all the lawyers in front of us, I think it seems to me that he probably believes the argument in a way that some of the others just don't. The others maybe are going through the motions a little bit, saying, well, I could argue the other side on another day. And he really does seem very committed to that. And it seemed very hard for him to shift gears in the middle of that argument as a great advocate that Mr. Olson, without a doubt, is, to say, you know, I better back off from that. I better help the judge get to where he wants to be, because a win is a win is a win, as opposed to win the whole cause in this one case.
Well, walk us through, David Levine, what some of the possible outcomes are at this point. And then we'll get to sort of the next stage. This is sort of we don't know whether this is going to be a three-act play or a four-act play, because there are several steps still to go forward. But there are several possibilities now. Take us through, if they wanted to rule in favor of those who oppose Proposition 8, those who support gay marriage, what are some of the rulings that they might come up with, from narrow to broad?
Sure. Well, let's go back to the first hour of the argument, which now seems so long ago. And in the first hour of the argument, it was all about standing. The narrowest way you could handle this case would be to decide that neither the Protect Marriage Group nor the people coming from Imperial County have standing to maintain this appeal. If they did that, they could write a very narrow opinion. They would be well within the grounds of the U.S. Supreme Court in the Arizona English language case. And they could simply say, this appeal doesn't belong in front of the circuit, and it will be dismissed. And then what that means is that Judge Walker's opinion stands as a district court opinion.
Let me ask you one thing about that, because some people have argued, including your colleague Vic Amar at the University of California, Davis, that if they don't find standing here, that also means they didn't have standing in the original case before Judge Walker. So it's like the whole thing didn't happen. Is that possible? Could we go all the way back to square one?
It's possible, but I really disagree with my good friend Vic on this one. I think that you have to separate out those two issues. I think that the question of intervention at the district court level is a different standard than the question of an appeal. And I think that what could happen here properly could be to dismiss the appeal, but then you wouldn't reach that question of whether or not Judge Walker should have gone ahead once the governor and the attorney general backed out.
We're joined now also by KQED News reporter Scott Schaefer, who has been in the hearing all day today so far. Scott, you're sort of on the scene assessment of what took place.
Well, it's fascinating to watch these three judges think out loud, in a sense, and try to struggle through these different issues. You have three ideologically diverse judges, the one, of course, Republican, Judge Smith, and the other two, moderate Democrat, and the more liberal Reinhardt. And yet they're all, to me, and David Levine would have a sharper sense of this, but I had a hard time figuring out where they're going to come down, because you have the question of on what basis should this proposition be examined. Is it the question of whether there was any rational basis whatsoever to enact Proposition 8, or is it merely based in animosity toward gay people and discrimination. And then you have all these other federal issues, such as the Romer decision that was so often referred to during today's oral argument. So the judges were just really struggling to find out what is the correct basis upon which to judge Proposition 8, what happened, how it went down, what its, the basis for it was, and also how Judge Walker evaluated it in the lower court. So it's a lot of tea leaf reading, but clearly these judges were trying to find a way to analyze this case in a way that they're comfortable with, and I'm not sure they're there yet.
The California Report, Scott Schaefer. David Levine, Scott just mentioned the Colorado comparison, Romer, kept coming up. Just real briefly, what's the comparison point there?
Sure. The comparison point is that what happened in Romer is that the people the people of Colorado passed a proposition which essentially took out of the Democratic discourse the possibility of gays and lesbians having equal civil rights, is that you just couldn't legislate about those issues. And for Justice Kennedy, for a 5-4 court, said that's just too far, that the only basis for that kind of a ruling was animus. And then the lawyers were trying to say, well, Romer's different.
It does seem that the specter of Justice Kennedy keeps appearing throughout these last 2.5 hours. A number of people were quoting him at regard, so it does seem to all be pointing in that direction. But I should say, there is an intermediate step that could happen before it would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's to request something called an en banc hearing. Tell us what that means.
Sure. Well, let's assume that the three-judge panel issues a ruling fairly quickly, and that then the losing party could choose the step of asking all the active judges of the Ninth Circuit to vote to hear the case en banc, which would mean 11 judges, the chief judge, and then other randomly assigned judges would hear the case as a sort of a super court of appeal before going to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Now, we have, you were outlining before, they could rule narrowly just on the question of standing. What else might they do, and what would have the largest implications that would take their rulings beyond just here in the state of California, but have implications for the rest of the Ninth Circuit or perhaps the rest of the country?
Sure. The most broad implication would be to say that it is just not proper to have any sort of a definition of marriage that does not include the right of same-sex couples to marry, and that that's something that's embedded in the U.S. Constitution, and that the particular circumstances of the California situation just are not material to that, and that at the end of the day, everybody has to have that. That would look like Loving versus Virginia in the sense that it would—
The interracial marriage case,
which would overturn the ability of states to say, well, only same people of the same race can marry. That would be a very broad holding. If this court, 2-1 or 3-0, were to make that ruling, you can be absolutely assured that the U.S. Supreme Court will take up that case.
And coming at it the other way around, any sense from paying attention to these last 2.75 hours, David Levine, that they might reverse Judge Walker entirely? Do you have a sense that that's even a possibility?
It doesn't look like you've got 3 votes to reverse him on the merits. It looks like you might have 3 votes on standing. You might have 3 votes to affirm, but not 3 votes to reverse.
David Levine, professor of law at the University of California College of Law at Hastings. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
And that concludes our special coverage. You've been listening to a statewide broadcast of the proposition hearing at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. For the California Report, I'm Dave Iverson.